A while back, my family and I took a trip to Kentucky. I was asked to do a funeral for a dear friend of our family. And on the way back, we were coming through the mountains back home. And for some reason, Tracy's car doesn't like mountains. I don't know what it is, but her car develops problems in mountains, which is an issue when you live in North Carolina, but you're from Kentucky, because there's lots of mountains between here and there. And so we've had this issue before. Well, this time, we're about 6 hours from home, coming through the mountains, going down the side of one of those mammoth mountains around Asheville, and her dash lights all up. The lights are going off and blinking and coming on and all kinds of crazy light stuff going on her dash. And then the car begins to act up, and it became clear that it was about to cease to function. And the car broke down as we pulled off the road into a parking lot. The car just broke down right there in the parking lot. Trips have trouble sometimes. Sometimes when you travel, you have difficulty. Sometimes you are flying and you miss a flight. Sometimes you go to visit your home state and happen to run into a hurricane, or a hurricane runs into you. People get sick, or other difficulties. You run out of gas. There are all sorts of problems that arise when you're taking a trip. And sometimes we use the imagery of a journey or a trip to picture life. And that's sort of what we're doing on Sunday mornings. We started last week a series of lessons called Our Journey of Faith and Obedience. We talked about trusting the guidance of God. Even when we don't know what's happening, He does. And we looked at Abraham. And this morning, we're going to look at dealing with difficulties and challenges along the journey of life. I want to begin by giving you a very profound statement. Now, those of you who brought something to write with are going to be glad that you have something to write with, so that you can write this down exactly as I'm giving it to you. Those of you who have a phone will want to take a picture of this very profound statement that I'm about to give you. So I'm just telling you, just be ready, because this is something you will not want to miss. 1 = 1. I told you it was going to be profound. This is something you did not want to miss. You know this. 1 = 1. That's a very simple equation. 1 = 1. We all understand that. We all know that that's true. But if we want to change that second one, if we want to change what's on the right side of that equation, what we need to do is to add something in to the left side of the equation. And when we add something to the left side of the equation, the right side of the equation changes. Now, this is not math class. And that's good, because I'm horrible at math. So it's a good thing that I'm not teaching you math. I'm giving you an illustration. And what I'm illustrating to you is an equation that I call, that I stole from somebody else. I'll just tell you, I didn't make it up. But I stole it from somebody else, Jay Connor. And he stole it from somebody else. So I'm going to give him up too. But I call this the life-changing equation. First, let me give you the equation that most people live by. Most people live by this equation, E = O. Most people live life by this equation. What this equation means is the E is an event, whatever happens. And the O is outcome. So if something bad happens, I lost my job, I broke up with my boo, and they left me, I've been diagnosed with some illness, or I have experienced a tragedy in life. I have had this bad event. The way that most people live is that the outcome is necessarily bad. Something bad happens, life is now bad. Something bad happens emotionally, now it's bad. Something bad happens, life can never be good. This is how most people live without even thinking about it. This is just how they live. But the good news is we don't have to live this way. Here's the good news, because just like one equals one, we can add something to this equation that changes everything. And what we can add is an R. So now this is the life-changing equation. E plus R equals O. Now guess what the R is? The R is your response. The response that you choose to the event. And I want you to notice how that changes the outcome. If I choose to meet an adverse event with gratitude, does that change things? If I choose to be grateful rather than miserable, does that change things? If I choose to use this event as an opportunity to refocus and recommit, if I choose to respond by reaching out and getting help, rather than that thing we always do, I'm going through it, I'm not going to tell anybody. If I tell somebody, I'm going to tell them not to tell anybody. I'm not going to tell the church. Nobody's praying for me. I'll face it alone. But when you reach out for help, that changes things. When you work on solutions rather than complaining, that changes things. And so the outcome now is very, very different. Now, just to show you that that's not all a bunch of self-help mumbo-jumbo, I want you to know that everything that I just told you is taught in the Bible. If you don't believe me, look it up. If you don't believe me, look at the verses that I'm providing to you right now. Where Paul says, for instance, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, that our outer man is decaying. What does that mean? It means that physically we're going downhill. Now, some of you are still on an uphill swing. Those of you who are 30, maybe 35, you know, our young Allen friends, the children that we have, members of Judd, Brother Clyde and Miss Jackie, some of their family are here, young people are here. I'd throw some others in there, but that's pretty much. So the young people are still on an uphill swing. Old people, do you remember those days? Remember those days when nothing hurt, everything worked? Do you remember those days? But you hit 35, 40. Paul says the outer man is decaying. We're getting older. We start to hurt. We start to creak. We start to pop. Things stop working. And the outer man is decaying. Yet, he said, our inner man is what? He said, even though physically we're going down, he said the inner man is what? Going up. Why? He tells us. As we look at the things that are not seen, as we fix our mind on things that are eternal. Paul's saying exactly what I just told you. He said we're having an adverse event. We're getting older and we're starting to decline. But because we choose to focus on spiritual things internally, we're getting better. It's exactly what I just told you. And those other passages teach the same thing. Now, our text this morning is James chapter 1. If you would turn over there to James chapter 1, it's very familiar. Those of you who have been in the church and read the Bible many times are going to know this passage like the back of your hand. I'm going to ask you to try not to. I'm going to ask you to try not to go, oh yeah, consider it all joy, I know what that says. Please don't do that. Can we read it? Can we read it? and think about it and sort of in a fresh way? Can we forget for a minute that we know all this stuff and talk about it and really think about it in a fresh way? James chapter 1 and verse 2. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith, without any doubting, for the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. James says in verse 2, to consider it all joy, what? To consider it all joy if you encounter trials? What does he say? Consider it all joy when? Why does he put it that way? Because it's inevitable. You can't help it. You can't avoid it. Job said, as sparks fly upward, so man is born for trouble. Trials are so prevalent, so widespread, so common, everybody in the room has at least one. So I want you to think about your trial. Don't do that thing we say all the time where we say leave our worries and cares behind when we come to church. Don't do that. But go ahead and bring it in. There's room. We've got room in here for all your baggage. So go ahead and bring it in. I want you to think about your problem. I want you to think about your worry, your fear, your concern, your pain, your hardship, your trauma. And I want you to think about it so that we can take this verse and apply it to what you're dealing with. Because if we're not careful, this is really abstract. And what I'm going to try to do to, in an almost painful fashion, is make it really practical. Very practical for you. So, James says, when you encounter trials, consider it joy. Now, what are your options? What are your options? When you're dealing with a difficulty, what are your options? Well, denial is one. You can deny it. It's one of my personal favorites. If I don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. Somebody brings it up, I ignore it, it's not real. The denial is like, I float down denial all the time. It's very common with me. Right? You can ignore it, you can act like it doesn't exist. Is that a good idea? If you keep having a chronic pain somewhere, is it a good idea just to go, well, that's not real, that's not what that is. That doesn't exist. Terrible idea. You can do that. You can blame somebody. That's always an option. You can blame somebody. It's their fault. That way it gets it off of you. There's no responsibility to deal with it. You can blame somebody else for it. You can engage in self-pity. I like that one too. Denial and self-pity is a dangerous combination. You can engage in self-pity. Woe is me. Why me? It's always me. You can do that. Escapism. You can get drunk. You can get high. You can have sex. You can do other things. You can watch TV. You can scroll on Facebook. And depending on whose account you're looking at, that's not a bad idea. But typically, you don't want to do that too much. Right? You can stay on Instagram all the time. Or become addicted to TikTok, for heaven's sake. You can escape. You can get angry. You can get mad. That feels good. I'm angry. I'm mad at somebody. I get mad at God. Mad at my family. Mad at my parents. You can do that. Or you can just throw up your hands and give up and say, forget about it. There's nothing to be done. All of those are options. They're just not good options. None of them are good options. And James tells us what to do. He says, when you encounter a trial, consider it all joy. Now, what does he mean when he says, consider it all joy? This is an important question. Does he mean that every trial is nothing but joy? That every trial is total joy? Of course not. Because trials are difficult. Trials bring sadness and anger and all sorts of worry and fear. Of course he doesn't mean that you can find a way for your trials to be nothing but joy. What he means is every trial can have an element of joy in it. Everything that you face can be a source of joy in your life. Do you know what trials he's talking about? There are four trials that are named specifically in the book of James. I think if James did not name them specifically, I would be hesitant to tell people to consider them joy. I think I would be hesitant if James did not say specifically that one of the trials that they were facing was poverty. I'm very hesitant to say to a person who doesn't have enough to eat, I consider it all joy. I'm uncomfortable with that. James was not. James said to his readers who were struggling to pay their bills and get by, consider it joy. Some of them were undergoing extreme oppression to the point of death. Some of them were being oppressed to the point of death. I would hesitate to walk up to a person who every single day is under the thumb of some person who's oppressing them and say, well, I just consider it joy. But James said that. James told them to do that. Church conflict. You've experienced that. I've experienced that. It's one of the most difficult things we deal with. And James said, consider it joy. Some of the Christians that they knew were just walking away. Have you experienced that? Have you ever had a good friend in the faith who fell away, just walked off, and just gave it up? And you knew that they were lost. You knew that they were apart from God. You knew that they were making a tragic mistake, and it broke your heart. They were dealing with that. And James said, you can find joy in it. You can find joy in that very difficult experience. He said to consider it all joy. Do you find your hardship in that list? Do you struggle to make ends meet? Are you under the thumb of someone who oppresses you, who treats you badly, someone who is mean to you or cruel to you? Hopefully, at least here, church conflict, not at this moment an issue, but we know how it is. Do you have family members who have walked away from God? Do you grieve and worry about people that you love, knowing that they're apart from God? Maybe some other trials that you're dealing with personally right now in your life, maybe school stress. Maybe you're in school and it's really hard. Or maybe you dread going to work in the morning. You know that Monday is coming tomorrow and you dread it because you hate your job. Your boss is a jerk. Your coworkers are mean. Carol, is that you? Is your boss a jerk? No? Okay. Sake of our visitors, Carol works with her husband, and so we're hoping that that's not an issue for her. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe someone that you love has died, or you're facing the possibility that someone that you love, you're going to lose, and you will never see them again. Maybe things at home are really difficult for you. Maybe home, which ought to be a place of peace and joy and relaxation, is a place of chaos and drama, and you hate going home because things are difficult. Maybe you're in constant physical pain. Something hurts all the time. Or maybe you're terrified of something that you think is going to happen in the future. You're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And you know when it does, things are going to be very difficult. What does James say to all that? Whatever your personal issue is, I want you to think about it right now. I want you to think about it right now. What is your problem? What is your fear? What are you hurting about? What's bothering you right now? Think about that and realize that James says what? Consider it joy. That's really hard. Consider it all joy. What's the big question there? What's the question that you need the answer to? What's the obvious question that you're asking as you think about your pain and you hear James say to you, consider it joy? Your response to that is, how? How in the world am I supposed to do that? Well, let me first tell you what James doesn't mean. He doesn't mean ignore it. He doesn't mean act like it isn't there. This is not what he's saying. He's not saying fake it. He's not saying fake it. He's not saying grin and bear it. He's not saying plaster a smile on your face and act like everything is fine. Smiling doesn't mean joy. And lack of smiling doesn't mean a lack of joy. Tracy's old boss, I used to sometimes pass him when I was running. And one day he said to Tracy at work, I saw David running. She said, yes. He said, does he enjoy running? She said, yes, he loves it. And he said, he doesn't look like he enjoys it. Doesn't look like he's having fun out there. Well, when it's the middle of the day and it's 85 degrees and you're exhausted and into a long run and desperately ready to be done, it doesn't look like you're having a good time. But that's something that I got a lot of joy from. Plastering a smile on your face is not experiencing joy. He doesn't mean accept it. In the sense of just say, well, that's how it is, and there's nothing that I can do about it. He doesn't mean, and yes, I'm using this as a verb, and I know it isn't. I know it's improper, but I couldn't find any other way to say it. Don't cliche it. Don't attack it with cliches. Don't say to yourself or other people, well, everything happens for a reason. Don't say, well, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Because guess what? Some things kill you. Don't say, well, you know, God never gives you more than you can bear. Because that's not true, by the way. The Bible does not teach that. In fact, it teaches the opposite. So, well, look on the bright side. Well, if I could do that, doofus, I would, but I don't know where it is. I don't know how to do that exactly. It's always darkest before the storm. Or my personal favorite, when God closes a door, He always opens a window. Isn't that ridiculous? How we use those cliches to try to make things better. Don't do that. And don't, sort of from the other side, don't judge other people for the way they're dealing with their issues. Don't use the Bible's teaching on dealing with hardship as a club when somebody else is struggling and you think they shouldn't be. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know anything about their problem. And so don't use the Bible as a club against people who are suffering. What he does mean is this, to simply choose to think correctly about your trial. You can choose the way that you view your difficulty. You can choose. Viktor Frankl was a Jewish psychiatrist who spent time in a Nazi concentration camp. I understand if you don't want to listen to me talk about difficulty. I mean, I've had difficulties, but I have a pretty good life. Viktor Frankl was a Jew in a Nazi concentration camp. When he got out, he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And what he said in that book was that the one thing that cannot be taken from you, the last of the human freedoms, is your ability to choose your response. He said between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is your freedom to choose how you will respond. And we all can do that. We all can do that. And so James says to remember this, that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And endurance, he says, will make you a complete person. So think about what he's saying. You're facing a difficulty. You're tempted to be miserable, angry, complain, give up, blame, whatever. He says, remember that going through this difficulty can make you a better Christian. Choose to remember that. And remember what this can do for you. Now, how do we do that? Well, I would make this suggestion. That when you're going through a difficulty, take a piece of paper and write it down. Again, I want to make this very practical. When you are going through a difficulty, get a piece of paper and write it down. Write down how this difficulty can help you grow and become stronger. Write down the lessons that you can learn from going through this hardship. Write down the things that you are still grateful for. Write down the way that relationships help you and can make things better. Write down the ways that you will now be better able to help other people. And then James says this in verse 5. I wrote a post the other day about the fact that James 1, for some reason, is an absolute hotbed of verses taken out of context. I don't know why there's such a concentration of verses taken out of context in James 1. But this is one of them. When James says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. He's not talking about just generally. Now, you can do that. But notice the word in verse 5, notice the word but. He's connecting the prayer in verse 5 with the teaching of 2 through 4. And his point is this. If you're trying to find a way to be joyful in hardship, but you can't, ask God. And He will give you the wisdom to be able to do so. Notice that James does not say, ask God to remove the hardship. Did you notice that? He doesn't say, ask God to take it from you, because He almost never will. He says, ask God to help you be able to handle it. If you ask God for wisdom, He will give it to you when you ask in faith. So you say, well, my faith is pretty weak, and right now I don't have a lot of faith. Well, guess what? There's an example of a man who came to Jesus to ask for a miracle. And he said to Jesus, if you can, will you do this? You remember that? And Jesus said to him, what do you mean, if I can? All things are possible to the one who believes. And then the man said what to Jesus? In complete honesty, complete transparency, I do believe. But what? Help my unbelief. To whatever degree that you do not believe, confess it. Go to God and say to Him, I'm going through hardship. I'm miserable. I'm trying to find joy and I can't. And I need your help. And I want to believe that you can help me, but I don't. Would you help my unbelief? And He will. This is how James tells us to deal with difficulty. Well, next week, Lord willing, we're going to finish the series in John chapter 14 when we talk about living a life of obedience. Tonight, we will be here at the church building. We will have a Bible class We're going to start a study of Galatians 6, 1 to 10, sowing to the Spirit. And tonight we'll introduce it and look at verse 1. That'll be at 6 o'clock here at the church building. But for now, let's just review what James just said, and then we'll be done. You can take out your song book and turn to the invitation song, and we'll sing that in just a minute. We're all going to have difficulty. As we journey, it's going to rain. Sometimes it's going to be a little drizzle. And sometimes it's going to be a shower, and sometimes it's going to be an all-out Category 5. Those things are going to happen. What does James say to do? He says, when you encounter a storm, he says you must change your thinking. You must change the way that you view the hardship and see in it the value that is possible. And so you say, I'm not able to do that. So James says, pray about it. Pray about it. And ask God to help you change your thinking. Write down the lessons, the things that you can learn, the ways that you can improve. And there's one other thing that we've talked about, that we didn't talk about, that I think would be in error to neglect. And that is another source of help in difficulty is other people. You can't do it alone, and you shouldn't try. You've got to reach out and get help from those around you. Now, when you've done all that, when you've changed your thinking, when you've prayed about it, when you've written it out, and when you have asked for help, guess what? That cloud is still going to be there. And it's still going to rain. It's not going to stop. But things will get better. There will be blessings. There will be relief. There will be growth. There will be blessings in those difficulties when you handle it the way that James has instructed us to handle it. Well, at the beginning of the sermon, I left us stranded in a parking lot in a car that wouldn't run. A few things about that I neglected to mention to you. Our car broke down as we pulled into the parking lot of a garage. A mechanic broke down right in the parking lot of a mechanic's garage. Now, he was proud of his work, and his prices reflected it, but he was able to fix our problem. Not right then, but he was going to get to it, and he did. But we still had to get home, and it was getting late in the day, and all of the rental car agencies would be closed by the time that we could get to Asheville, all of them, except for one who stayed open late. And we had enough time to get there. We just didn't have a way to get there. So I called the only cab company that serviced the area. And I got the guy on the phone. It was him. He was the whole business. And I said, we need a ride to Asheville. And he said, I've got a fare. I'm already engaged. I'm taking somebody somewhere. But, he said, I think I've got time to drop them off and come and get you to Asheville before the rental car agency closes. And he did. So that trip was attended with a tremendous amount of difficulty. If you have ever broken down hours from home in the middle of nowhere, at the mercy of strangers, you know that that is a stressful and expensive situation. But it worked out. It worked out. We got our car fixed. We got to the rental car agency. We got home. We got back and picked up our car, and it runs like a top today. Hopefully don't have to take it through mountains again, but it's fine for Morehead City. The point is that things don't always work out the way we want them to. They don't always work out smoothly. They don't always work out painlessly. But when you are a Christian, and when you do things and you handle difficulty the way that James teaches us to handle them, things always work out. Always. This morning, if you're not a Christian, we're going to sing this song that Aubrey announced in just a moment. As we do, this is an opportunity for all of us to think carefully about where we are, how we're living, what our relationship with God is. This song is going to encourage us to think about the place that God holds in our lives. And we're going to be singing a very lofty sentiment. We're going to be singing something that should characterize all of us. The purpose of the song is to get us to examine whether or not it does. And as you do that, maybe you realize that you don't have any relationship with God at all. We'd love to help you with that, talk to you about it, or immerse you this morning if you're ready to do that. Maybe you're a Christian and you know that there are struggles and weaknesses, maybe a departure. We'd love to help you with that as well. So as we sing the song, you think about your condition and you make a decision, we would love to help you. We'd love to speak with you privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.